Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host, Han Tran. Han, how are you?
I am absolutely marvelous, Jim. How are you?
Now, don't tell me how nice the weather is down there, because I know it's much better than ours. We are we are looking at super record low temperature tonight of 8 degrees in northwestern Ohio, when the normal temp during the day should be in the 40s and during the night should be, you know, probably in the, you know, around freezing. So, yeah, we have got some super cold weather coming in. We got 4 inches last night in one snowfall, and that was real 4 inches because I dug it out this morning. Yeah, yeah. So it's rather interesting. You're probably, what, 70-plus sunny?
I can respond to that really, really quickly. It's flip-flop weather.
Exactly. Yeah, it's crazy. Well, you know, there's always pluses and minuses depending on where you're at, but obviously
yes,
tonight we want to say welcome to Straight Talk, episode number 52. And it's going to be one of our cool shows that we basically are going to have questions from you, our listeners. We've got actually a pile of them here, and we're going to try to get through as many of as we can, but we're going to take our time and really answer them thoroughly. And like always, both Han and I are promising we're not going to hold back. We're going to share our unbiased answers, aren't we, Han?
Uncensored.
Uncensored? Unbiased?
Yes,
yeah,
uncensored.
Exactly.
Unbiased.
And we will just be as forthright as we can be without being obnoxious. We don't want to be that. Well,
No,
without a doubt. Because, you know, this really is about just getting the information out to everybody out there. We're real thankful for you, our listeners, to be able to get an opportunity. We're getting a lot of positive feedback, and the amount of listens has been growing quite nicely. And I think we announced back on our 50th show that now all of our podcasts are on our YouTube channel, so you can get them there. You can get them on Blog Talk Radio. You can get them on our website. You know, go to www.hjtdesign.com. You can get it there. So there's plenty of places for you to be able to listen. Actually, I think we're even on things like podcast or Comcast and a few of other places that I noticed that they're actually able to be listened to as well. So we are also in the works on that video YouTube presentations, and those will be coming out shortly. And when they do happen, we'll announce them. But a lot of cool, exciting things that are going on, and it's a great time. It's a great time to be in the business of dentistry. So here's one of I guess it's probably the most intense possible question we can answer, but it's going to take a little while, but we'll get through it here. And the question came in is, can you talk to me about the advantage/disadvantage between a linear versus a circular clinical space layout? Well, you know, Han, you're our resident expert when it comes to the clinical space and the design of that. So I'm going to let you address that, and we can start off the discussion. What the heck is a linear and circular clinical layout in the first place?
I think the term circular may be a little bit misconstrued, okay, because it's in building design, and I made this, well, let me say, I thought I was doing something really, really cool. When I was in high school, taking up drafting and doing, you know, in the class, and one of my building was designed on the premise of three modules or three circles. Okay, this is a joke. It's very hard to find a corner in a circle. Okay, it's
impossible.
And it makes things a lot more difficult to work in a more of a circular pattern. I think the term, the more correct term would be consolidated or condensed. One of the most commonly used term to describe a linear layout of the you know, of the dental offices that bowling alley affects. You know, sometimes it's the physical space, you know, the wall space you have to work with, can somewhat dictate what you can do, and what's the final outcome of the design, you know, or the layout of the space. So if you have, you go into, for instance, you know, a shopping center, a retail space, naturally the likelihood of you getting a, you know, a space that has weird configuration or weird footprint is pretty minimal. Usually you start out with a rectangular shape footprint. And so, you know, the natural process is, you know, you line one side of the building with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 treatment room, and then on the other, and then you have, of course, you have the corridor, and then on the other side you lay out everything else that are not treatment room.
So that I understand, and the listeners that are out there might understand, in that kind of linear arrangement, let's say that each operatory is 9 feet apart, just for calculation standpoint, from operatory 1 to operatory 10, you're 90 feet apart if you have 10 operatories. So if I need to get from operatory 1 to operatory 10, I have to walk 90 feet down the long bowling alley kind of corridor that you're talking about. Okay.
Yep. You do that all day long. All right. With that layout, the dental staff and the dentist should be really, really fit. They should be like Olympians because they walk so much. Okay. I think part of the mindset about that kind of layout is that your plumbing, your vacuum, and all, everything is, you know, it's stacked like a Lego. And then the other argument is, or the other thinking is that the noise from the treatment room doesn't flow across the hallway into other treatment room that may or may not be on the other side of the corridor. You know, some organization that their MO, their mode of operation is laying it out in a very linear configuration. There's not, in my opinion, there's not a right way and a wrong way. They're just one way for a certain mindset and the other way for to be more truly, in my opinion, to be more truly efficient and to live up to the thinking and the desire of being more economical or more ergonomic is that you
consolidate. Well, Han, what is a clustered layout look like then?
Well, the cluster or consolidated layout, naturally you want to have where you take the treatment room and you pull them tight together, not in a linear direction, but more where you have, let's say you have a treatment room. You could have four treatment rooms on one side of the corridor and four on the other side of the corridor, so that all your, you know, now you are, instead of walking, you know, 80 feet, you're walking 40 or less. So everything is tighter together. All your utilities are more consolidated. They just, the footprint of your clinical space is a lot tighter. Some years ago, I was involved in a design of a factory, the modern factory, where they say, you know, you can, you know, in the old days, you, when you look at a factory, it stretched for, you know, miles. You go one end, the raw material come in, and it go through the conveyor. You know, they set the manufacturing line, and then they spit out on the other end of the building, you know, the finished product end up on the other side, at the other end of the building, and then they get shipped out. Well, that takes so much building, so much equipment, so much labor to man and manage and repair and maintain, compared to the modern factories. And they take the same, they take the building and they fold it in half. Okay? So the raw material coming from one end of the building, it loop around, and the finished product come out at the same end of the building. So the your shipping and your delivery and your shipping are in the same location. It actually reduced your building in half. Okay, so when you talk about efficiency, that is what you're trying to do, is to minimize the amount of raw material, whether it is product or manpower, by half, if all possible. So the whole concept of design a dental office is that you want to be nice to your staff and pull everything as tight together as possible, so that way they don't have to be running like they're on, running track, going back and forth from one end of the building to the next. So mm-hmm. you
so
still
in the
have...
In your condensed version, you talked about a pair of operatories or rows of operatories that are across the hall from each other. Couldn't you also say, spread that hallway out a little bit and cluster your sterilization and the other support spaces, so that effectively they're like, I want to call them like galleys, in the sense that you literally can walk right through them to get from one side to the other side, but at the same time, they're very efficiently placed right where they need to be.
Yes, it's more like if you have there's two ways to do it. It all depends on the physical space you have to work with. Okay, you can split the treatment room on each side of the building, and you have a central core where your sterilizations and your lab and your supply and all that is central. Ideally, you want the sterilization is basically like the heart of the operation, and it need to be as central as possible, so that the staff, within the treatment room don't have too far to get to it and to get the supply and all that good stuff. So it's again, you consolidate things so that they basically kind of surround the sterilization area, like the core of the clinical area. So it can be, you can have the treatment room on one side of the building, on both sides of the building, and it's flanked, the central core would be your sterilization, okay? Or you can do a linear. But again, I think you have to look at the shape of the building, or the footprint of the space that you have to work with, and if all possible, consolidate it, because when we design, it's broken the it separates the practice itself into three areas. You got your public area, you got your clinical area, and you have your staff area. Okay, it's very similar to the old principle of designing homes. So all your public areas in the front, you know, your waiting room, your consultation, your front office, and all that would be your typically your public area. And then the next area would be your work zone or your clinical area, and then beyond that would be the staff. So, you know, if you can see and or can make it happen in that manner, or in that with that particular mindset, then in my opinion, you have a much more you kind of keep the traffic separate, and you have a much more efficient layout and function for your practice.
Right.
Does that make sense?
So, yeah, that does make sense, because really what we're talking about here is efficiency in several areas. First of all, it's the efficiency of the staff. Because if they can be more efficient and save, you know, half a dozen steps every patient, you multiply that times how many patients they see during a day, it gets to the point where you can actually add a patient in to your given work schedule. So that's one efficiency.
Yeah.
The other efficiency is that the efficiency for the doctor themselves and how they need to utilize, get from where they're at to the treatment room, both for the clinical treatment and for the checkups in the hygiene. So they have to be efficient. So if they're not having to run a marathon and go that 90 plus feet, if you've got a 10 operatory and a long linear kind of arrangement, it allows them to, again, potentially add another patient in to a given time period. And then the third is the efficiency of staff taking the patient to the clinical area, to the operatory. Because if they don't have to walk down that long corridor to get from, you know, sure, maybe let's say that the lobby is close to operatory one, but that gets filled up first. And so, you know, and if you use the first five operatories for hygiene, then your hygiene appointments are coming in there. But, you know, if you've got any procedures, they're going in, you know, operatories 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. That means they have to walk half the distance of the building as opposed to all the way to the end of the building, and staff has to escort them down there. So that just becomes another very inefficient kind of arrangement. In my mind, that's a disadvantage in the linear as opposed to the condensed option that you were talking about, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, I think there's always a trade-off, okay? You know, the feedback I often get is the dentist's office is always noisy. Yes, it's noisy because there's all kind of equipment. Most dentist's office nowadays don't have doors. They have doorways. Okay, so conversation can flow into the corridor and across into the, you know, into the treatment room across the hallway. I have not run into a situation where, HIPAA is an issue in a dentist's office because conversation just kind of flow from place to, you know, from space to space. It's hard to contain conversation when you have a person that speak louder than usual in a treatment room next door to you. And the treatment room don't have any doors. There is a number of ways that the noise issue can be addressed. Noise could come from, you know, your equipment, conversation, foot traffic, And it, you know, it can be, so the selection of the materials and how you treat the physical space can minimize that. And then naturally, when you have a room, if there's a door opening, there can always be a door. Okay. So I think that the trade-off of efficiency versus the noise containment is well worth it. You know, because you can solve issues associated with noise after the once the building is designed versus reconfigure the building because it's too inefficient. Okay, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Because I mean, obviously, if you have a brand new building placed on a blank piece of property, then you can really design a layout that can be super, super efficient because there's no criteria that says the building has to be long and skinny, square, rectangular, whatever it is. It's all open. You have a blank canvas. Now, if you've got a long, skinny kind of space because you're going into a retail center, then obviously there's some constraints there, and then you have to work around those constraints. Or if you're looking at a condominium kind of space, and you're taking, you know, 1/3 of the building, and maybe you've got a bigger rectangle as opposed to a long, skinny bowling alley. So all of that kind of falls into helping you make a decision on what space you should look at. I guess we haven't talked about that, but you know, if you're looking at three different options, keep that in mind, right? Because if you want to be super, super efficient and effectively, it allows you to make more money and it allows you to work less and it allows your staff and your patients to be there shorter periods of time, it almost makes sense to, you know, get yourself a blank piece of canvas and build something brand new if you can, as opposed to trying to buy a space that's kind of going to, let's say, a long, skinny space that's part of a retail center or a condo building. So that I guess that has to be thought about when you're making your decision about where you're going to put your practice, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it depends on where you are in your career, okay, and whether you're in in a position to lease or to buy. You're not everybody want to own, all right, but. We did talk to some extent of what the ideal shape for a practice should be, and that's pretty easy. It's a rectangular shape. It's a lot easier to work with a rectangular shape footprint than something that are weird, because the weirder the shape, the more waste it becomes, right. The more compromised the layout, and the less efficient it becomes.
Right,
so,
but the rectangular space you're talking about is almost square.
You're right. They're closer to being square than rectangular.
Yeah, they're not long, skinny spaces. They're not like the typical
right.
retail center that's, you know, 20 feet wide and 70 feet long. That's a bowling alley. We're talking about are rectangular spaces that are like, you know, what, 50 by 50 or something like that.
And a lot of times
30 by 40.
You know, when I look at, I think for the listeners that you have to weigh what is important, functionality, efficiency, and so on versus aesthetic. Okay, because it seems like so often I see the train of the design is driven by pure aesthetic, and then you try to fit in the functionality of the practice into that that mold. You can do a heck of a lot of really, really cool stuff with a rectangular shaped building that had that are very efficient in the design and all that. So I tend to be more heavier on the functionality and efficiency, and then the aesthetic. I mean, aesthetic is kind of wide open for interpretation, because you can do a lot of really cool stuff once you determine the need of your the functionality of how your practice going to how it's going to work out. Okay, so I tend to be more practical than trying to make it look pretty before everything else gets well worked out.
Mm-hmm. So the old adage that we learned back in architecture school was form follows function, and that's really
yep.
true.
Yep.
Yeah, it really does. The form of the building really follows the function of the building, and the function of the building has to do with the how you're using it and how you should use it to be as efficient as possible.
Yeah, the core of your business should dictate the function, and then once that's defined, then you can formulate any way you want. Whatever color, whatever finishes. And whatever accessory you want to throw on the walls and so on, those things are almost secondary.
Yeah. Well, we can make anything look good, Han. Come on, you know that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. Of course.
Obviously, as architects and in the architectural field, we are very concerned about aesthetics. We've done shows that talk about first impressions and aesthetics and all those things. Those are very important aspects. But in this particular question, and I know we're deviating a little bit from it, but it's important as part of it, what the advantages and disadvantages between these two kind of layout methodologies. To me, it's almost, it's a no-brainer. You definitely want to use the condensed or clustered kind of arrangement, if at all possible, because it will be the most efficient space. The equipment doesn't make the space efficient. The size of the operatory doesn't make the space efficient. It's how they're arranged to themselves, because that's where you're going to gain the most efficiency. How do you get from 1 to 2 to 2 to 3, 4 to 5, and everything in between? That's where you're going to make up efficiency big time, because if you've got to go 90 feet from 1 to 10, that's a long haul, as opposed to going 40 feet from 1 to 10. Right?
That's right. If you can save, sure. I mean, look at that. It's not so much of saving a step or two. I mean, it's a repetition all day long, and those seconds add to minutes, those minutes add to hours. And if you do that, if you look at if you can save and reduce the amount of step, reduce the amount of time, and you add it up to the entire year, you can buy some really, really nice cars.
Or some more equipment.
All right. Yeah.
Or pay off that new equipment that you just bought. Yeah,
and so you it gives you, again, time is money, and that's where the efficiency of the practice, the way it's laid out, really matters.
Well, and it's threefold, because it's not just you, the doctor. It's you, it's your staff, it's your hygienist. It's fourfold, and it's your patient. The patient experience is a lot more pleasant not having to walk that whole long distance to operatory number 10 if they're walking down the bowling alley. Whereas in the patient experience, to you know, to walk to operatory 10 in the condensed version, you know, it's 40 feet compared to 90 feet. That's half, theoretically half the distance. So it's a,
yeah, I mean, the whole thing also, holds true is that when you isolate, the work, you know, the zones within the office, is that you don't want your patient to intermingle and or to see the staff space, okay? Because let's say you have if you have a treatment room next to your staff area, staff conversation could get a little bit loud and things like that. So we tend to separate, you know, and isolate the individual zone within the office as much as possible, and the more concentrated or the condensed footprint of the clinical space allow us to achieve this division much easier.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, hopefully that's answered the question, but if at all possible, I think in a nutshell, you know, go with the condensed or the clustered kind of arrangement if you physically can, because you're going to save yourself a whole lot of headache. I don't see any disadvantages to doing that as opposed to the bunch of disadvantages on the linear kind of arrangement. Well, we've got another question here that it's kind of we've talked about a little bit before, but I think it's good to talk about it some more. And the doctor says, I want to build in Utah. How can your company handle my project? Don't you have to be there? What do you think, Han?
Well, I think, let me see. Technology has a lot allow, not just us, allow some small firm to compete with global company at a very, very large scale. For instance, we had a consult and design for practices that are abroad. How do we do that? I've never been to India, but we were able to help design a practice in India. I've never been to Australia, and we've done that. So technology allow us, and when I say us, I mean all of you included, to communicate with your family, with your friends, with your peers, your colleagues, really, really almost on demand, whether it's, you know, whether it's on a, you know, Skype or any or that type of technologies, so that you can almost look at each other's face and communicate. We can transmit drawings to anywhere, at any time, at any stages. We can demonstrate the progress and the ideas and all that using technology. Is there a need for your design team to be on site? Yes and no. There is a time that they need to be physically be on site to look at the progress of the project, but they do not need to be on site daily, because it's a waste of time. It's not the best use of time, and it would
it's
cost
expensive.
You way too much to
it. Costs
yeah.
a lot of money.
Now you won't want your architects, your project architect, to function like the security guard on your project, because in a day worth of work, you know, they already done their work. Basically, they did the design, they put the specification together, all the detail, all the decision of what, where, and all that stuff had been done before the construction start. So when the construction start, it is, you know, the contractor is the one that's supposed to build everything. The architect will go out into the site periodically to make sure that everything is, you know, is putting together in the manner it's supposed to be. But the need for the architect to be on site isn't really necessary, not on a daily basis. So how would a firm located in, let's say, in Ohio take care of a project in Utah? True technology, and if need to, you get on a plane and you go there. Okay, it is not unusual to have a company that are in, you know, in Florida, California, Minnesota, or Texas design a project, you know, in Hawaii or Alaska. So those days of having to physically be there doesn't exist anymore. Even back in the, you know, even back in the 80s when I got into, you know, into this profession, we've done projects that out of state that I've never seen, you know, Pennsylvania, Florida, because you can, all right? So is there a need? No. There is a time, there is a right time periodically that your design professional, you know, need to go out to the site. But on a daily basis, they can handle everything over the phone.
Right. Well, over the phone and via technology, we have, in certain cases, if it becomes necessary, you get the project manager who's on the job. He grabs his iPhone, he clicks it on video record, and he shares the screen via Skype and points it at the issue. He can talk directly to myself or Han. We can see everything that they're talking about, because really that's what we're there for. We're there to ask questions of them, help them through if there are any issues or problems, and solve those via recommendations with us or our engineers. And even in that, we can tie together engineering firms. Let's say we're talking about a foundation issue. And so we'll tie together the structural engineer, ourselves, and the contractor. And you're looking at the foundation issue. Here's the problem. Here's the issue. Everybody is physically engaged within the discussion, just like we're physically standing there, but we're not. We're here. And the engineer could be wherever they're going to be at. We make the recommendation, the necessary paperwork follows through, the contractor knows what he needs to do, and boom, moves forward. It's actually even more efficient and faster that way, as opposed to saying, oh crap, we've got an issue with the foundations, everybody get here. Well, unless the architect and the engineer literally reside one block over, it's going to take them some period of time. Let's say you're in Chicago, and you got to get from one side of Chicago to the other side of Chicago, or where you're at, Han, down in Florida. You got to get one side to the other side. How many hours does that take? You know, right there, you've lost a couple hours just in travel time getting from point A to point B, let alone with people's schedule, when theoretically we could have already had that Skype conference, shared screen, and did it in 15 minutes. So having somebody physically at your location is old school. It's the old way of doing things. It's inefficient. It kind of talks about what we were just talking about in the way of inefficiency. It's inefficient for Han and I to get on an airplane and spend hours to get all over the country to go to certain places when we can do it in literally minutes with the technology. And if the project is complicated enough, or if it dictates whatever, you know, we can have a representative. For example, we always like to hire a civil engineer that's local to the job, because they need to be local because they understand all the ins and outs of the governmental approvals and such from a civil standpoint, it's always better to use a local civil engineer. We can use them as a liaison to help very easily. We've done that before. We could also hire consultants that actually work for us that go out and observe the project on a case-by-case basis periodically, send us reports, actually do video recordings of everything. There's just a multitude of ways of doing it. So don't worry that we have to spend a whole bunch of hours going from point A to point B and charge you for it, because we don't do that. Han and I'd spend too much time on an airplane and not get any work done, wouldn't we?
That's right. They won't let, for some reason, they won't let me spread out my computers on the airplane.
Yeah, unfortunately, we can't work on those itty-bitty little tablet things. You know, we got to have a serious computer because we're doing serious stuff.
That's right. No, but mainly it's like if you are, let's say, if a project is in, in Michigan, for instance, Chicago, a 2 or 3 hour drive, it's very doable. But still, what you look at is a 3 hour drive one way, 3 hour drive back, that's six. And, you know, the meeting may be an hour. That's a full day. That's a full day of work. A full day of billable hours for 1 single hour worth of discussion. Okay.
But when we could have just done that 1 hour on a combined Skype conference video call.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that is a whole team.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you have everybody there. If you need them,
yep,
or whoever you need to have, it's,
yep,
part of the team to address that particular issue. Now, don't get us wrong. There are times when Han and I might have to physically be at a location. That's fine. We're there. We can do that. But when it makes sense,
no,
and it makes sense and it's cost efficient, we're not going to just do it so that we can, you know, charge somebody more. That's not what we do.
Now, for instance, you know, it's a judgment call, and how critical the issue is. For instance, last week I spent a day and went across the state because the information I provided on a project where the building was, the information that was provided to me indicate that the building footprint is a foot larger than what I have, and there is no way for me to confirm that what we have is accurate, except being there and verify that information myself. Okay, it was critical because you want to have accurate information to work with, and we make no assumptions. So those are judgment call of yes, it takes 3.5-4 hours one way to travel there by road, okay? Because it's a lot faster to do that than to get in line for an airplane ride. So we, you know, the availability of time to respond to projects and stuff like that are on a case by case. But every project we dedicate a certain amount of time to address things in the field. But in general, everything is done via technology as much as possible. So whether you're in California or Hawaii or Alaska and your design team is on the other side of the state or continent, and that's almost no longer even a topic of debate. So technology is a blessing in our line of work.
Yep, without a doubt. And, you know, sure, there might be times, and we do it, if you have to go through a approval process that requires a architectural review and the architect has to be there to describe to the approval agency, the board, what's going on, what it's going to look like, how it's going to function, answer all their questions, then absolutely. We're there. because that, you know, that's what we do, and that's how we need to get the project done. You, some things you can't do by technology, and that's okay. But those are pretty far and few between, and you know, you combine them together to consolidate it so it becomes a useful trip. So hopefully that answers the question. The answer is absolutely, we can do your project in Utah, and we'll probably do it more efficiently than somebody that actually resides or has a practice on the other side of town. All right.
It's a combination of knowledge, experience, and you know, and chemistry. If you have a team that know what they're doing, and you have good working relationship with them and a comfort level with them that they can take on the job, versus somebody that are local, they have never even laid a pen down to draw or to design a dental office, and they're cutting teeth on your project, and that's a totally different issue and different game altogether. Okay, so but it has to do not just not just one factor or two factor. It has to do with the chemistry and the total package that work on your behalf. Jim?
Yep, absolutely. Let's try to get a couple more quick ones in here. Here's one that says, do you provide professional consultation services as part of your process/system, and how does that work? Well, actually, we do, and it's something we're going to really be addressing here more than what we have to this point. Dr. Hunsinger, one of the, of course, our co-founders, part of myself and Han, is a practicing dentist with unbelievable credentials, been at it, 35 plus years or more, done more than typically one would expect within those years, and, you know, owns several practices, several labs, several organizations, and employs just a ton of people. But he provides, as part of one of our services, a consultation service that is very invaluable in the sense that it's custom tailor-made to what your needs are, so that you can utilize him to grow your practice from where you're at now to the point where, okay, how do you get from point A to point B? Point B meaning I need to be in a financial position to be able to start my new construction and move into my new facility. I know I need to do something, but I don't need to go there. Well, you're the perfect person that needs to talk to Bill, because that's what he can do. He can help you get from point A, where I'm at now, I know I need to do something, but I don't know what, to point B, I'm ready to start and move into the next step, which is where Han and I get involved in, you know, designing your new facility and moving you into that and up the ladder. And then as part of that services, he also helps at the end of the project, meaning what Han and I do when we get past the construction and you moved in, then he can provide a service that will help you from opening the practice for how many ever years afterwards, first 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, whatever you want to do, to help you build that practice base even further. So theoretically, it's what it's for, is to really set you up to succeed.
Jim, one thing you did mention is that for us on the architectural side, when a client come and they say, I got this building or this site and I'm thinking about buy it and doing this or doing that, and we will assess the physical site and the physical building and compare it to their objective and stuff like that. And if it doesn't fit their need, we would tell them this: walk, This is not the right site. This is not the right building. Bill does the same. So if you come and sit down, you know, with Bill or talk to him over the phone or whatever, he assesses where you are in your career, your skill set and stuff like that, and he'll tell you. You know, you may need a couple more years to do this and that so that you gain the confidence, the clinical skill, and the management level, the management knowledge and all that stuff before you open your practice and hang up your shingles. Okay, so sometimes you need that. You know, we're not in the business of just simply taking every client because we need to work. No, we do the work because it's the right thing for them. It's the right time for them. So we have no problem of saying, this is not for you. Okay? You're not ready. Bill, do the same. Jim?
Right. But he'll give you solutions on how to get ready. That's the
yep.
different part about it. You know, he said, okay, this is what you'll need to do. You need to do this, 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 and this. You need to build your client base, your patient base. You need to build increase staff productivity, boom, 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 whatever it all is, all the things that he grows through. You do all those things and you'll be ready. And here's the timetable. You know, you've got 6 months, you've got a year, whatever it is, boom, boom, boom. It's all laid out in a systematic kind of process. And then once you've got moved into your new facility, then it's like, okay, let's grow. Let's grow even more from where you're at there. So to answer your question is, yes, it is something that our organization provides. And if you'd like to speak more about it, give us a call. We'll get you in touch with Bill, and we'd be glad to try to help you out. Let's see if I get one more in here, Han. And, well, I think we can do it, but this is kind of an interesting one. I've got a practice, and I want to expand. So I've got an existing building, and I want to expand that existing building. How do I do it without shutting down the practice?
That would be tricky. Okay? That would be tricky.
That's the million-dollar question.
Yes, it is. Okay. Can it be done? Yes. But you have to – let's go back to the day that you're thinking about building a practice. Okay? If you lack the planning of what it is that you want to do, you know, in the future as you grow and things like that, this is the point where you go like, oh crap, I didn't do the proper planning. Okay? If you don't plan for growth and when you're ready to do it, is the likelihood of or the desire of not having to shut down your facility would not be in your favor. If you have, it's a case scenario. So if you have, let's say you're in a condo or you're in a retail space and you need to, and you're ready to expand, your big decision is, do I expand where I'm at? Do I have the ability to do that? Do I have the opportunity to do that? Or do I expand by relocating to another location? Those questions only you can answer. If you're in a lease space, hopefully the language in your lease give you a first dip of the vacant space next door. Sometimes I've seen where tenants get pretty creative in terms that they will actually pay for the relocating of their neighbor so they can have the neighbor's space to grow into. Okay, that's a little extreme. That's a little creative. Not everybody's in the financial position to do that, but I've seen that done. Okay, so, but again, if you didn't plan for growth, that process is going to be a little bit more painful than you plan to accommodate that expansion when you start out the design out of your space or your building, because you have no footprint. You got no map to go on except what the heck do I do with this, and how do I do with the least amount of pain, with the least amount of downtime, with the least amount of money. All of that becomes kind of somewhat painful to realize. We have done numerous of projects. In fact, we have we have several on the table right now that deals with expansion. And it takes careful planning. It takes more money to expand into a space that was not planned out from the start. So that when you're done, you actually have a practice that looked like it was done with with the mindset that it's a single practice rather than a compartment here, a compartment there, and it's connected by a doorway. So have that discussion early on when you start, even when you start on your startup, that have that, think it out, plan it out. If you're going to be there and you're going to grow, how should your facility lay out so that when you expand, how is it going to be executed? Don't leave it for chance, okay? We see it too often, and if you don't plan out, you have too much compromise in what the final outcome can be, rather than what the outcome will be because you plan it out. Jim?
Yeah, there's a bunch of creative ways to attack this problem. Obviously, the worst scenario would be that you have to shut your practice down for an extended period of time. And I'm talking about extended period of time. A lot of times, depending on the scope of the renovation, you might be looking at 2 or 3 months. Well, I don't know what practice can survive taking a 3-month hit of, no money coming in. That just doesn't seem practical. But if you were to break up the work pieces into smaller tasks and create those in such a way that, there's a lot of creative ways. We've set it up in such a way that maybe a majority of the work can be done after hours or on an extended hour schedule. So let's say you keep your practice open 4 days a week. And that might be too much. Maybe it has to be 3 days a week. It all depends on what the tasks are. But let's say you keep it up so many times, and so you work 3 long days, 8 or 12 hour days to get in the necessary hours to keep the practice going. But then you have 4 days. Obviously, the contractor is going to be asking for more money, but you got to weigh that. But let's say you have 4 days then that you can work literally, hopefully, at least 2 shifts, if not 3 shifts, 24 hours a day on your renovation and do what you need to do. Break it up into a certain task so that they work 4 days, you work 3 days. At the end of their 4 days, they know that you're going to be working 3 days, so they need to get to that point where that you can move back. I would say move back in, but you can move. You can continue to work. So things have to be partitioned and scheduled. It's kind of like a dance that you have to be very careful with, and work very closely with the design team, work very closely with the contractor, work very closely with the building officials, so that all of this can work together. But it can be done. It's not impossible, and it really has to do with the total scope. And, we would design it in such a way that it theoretically could happen like that. That's one of another option. And we've had that before, is where you physically move into a temporary place. Now, that may say, what? you're talking, I've got to move out of my space and move into a temporary space. Well, you know, maybe it, you rent yourself a modular, which they aren't that expensive, and you can rent them for, let's say it's a 3-month duration. You rent it for a 3-month duration. You move it in, you park it in the parking lot, and that's where you keep the practice going for 3 months while they bust like crazy to get the renovation done in your new space, and you move right back in. Now, is that inconvenient? Sure is. But it sure beats not having a paycheck for 3 months and shutting the practice down and basically risking losing a whole bunch of patients during that period of time. So there are a lot of creative ways that can be thought about on how best to get this accomplished. But mostly it comes down to, you know, getting the right design team that understands how that work with the contractor or the project manager, and work with both of those, work with the building officials so that you can make this all happen.
Yeah, it's a lot of coordination. I mean, timing and coordination.
A lot.
And your design team have to know how to accommodate your schedule. They may have to know how to to phase the construction and design around the phasing of the construction. It's like Jim say, it's a dance, and you got to know the music, okay? Otherwise, you're gonna stumble. So it's doable.
It could be a scenario you're gonna be putting on 4 operatories. Well, maybe it means you build 1 operatory at a time, and that's phase 1, phase 2, phase 3, phase 4. Now, that's inefficient. The best scenario, you build all 4 at the same time. But you're not going to, you can't do that if you want to live within that space and use it. So you may have to build 1 at a time, 1, 2, 3, 4, or build the shell and then go in and finish 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen. It may mean that you build operatories on the addition. Okay, that happens, and then you physically move into the addition, and then the contractor comes into your existing space and does the work that they have to do within that existing space to meet the full design that's been come up with. So, you know, it's that dance of how you work back and forth to make this whole thing work. So. Bottom line is, you better call Han.
419-410-1562. It's actually there. We have a discussion actively about expanding on downtown. About expanding into the adjacent space and try to minimize the impact on the practice. I'm not beating my own chest or patting my own back. It takes a certain level of thinking and problem solving to execute the task at hand. It's not something that anybody can do because they own a computer or software. There's a lot of thinking that go into it. There's a lot of consideration that need to be taken, accounted for. So expanding into the adjacent space isn't something that and you just basically say, just do it, okay? It takes a lot of coordination because it can mess up a lot of things. It can get very costly if it's not done methodically and thoroughly. Hey, Jim?
Yes, absolutely. Well, we've gone a little over. We tried to get a bunch of questions in. We didn't get to all of them, but, thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of our show. Hopefully it's been helpful. Keep the email questions coming in. You can go to the website, www.hjtdesign.com. Click on the link there. Submit that email question. We'll do our best to get it in. If we have to, we'll do more of these shows. We like them. They're fun. Hopefully they're informative. So with that, I'll shut up. I'll say, Han, you get the last word. Look forward to hearing, seeing you guys next week.
And so if you want to check out what we had to say, 51 episode prior to this one, go onto our website and check out our YouTube videos and stuff like that, and catch up a little bit. It might be entertaining for you too. I certainly appreciate you spending the hour with us. Hope you have fun like we have fun. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.